Welcome to the Digital Identity Digest, the audio companion to the blog at Spherical Cow Consulting. I'm Heather Flanagan, and every week I break down interesting topics in the field of digital identity, from credentials and standards to browser weirdness and policy twists. If you work with digital identity but don't have time to follow every specification or hype cycle, you're in the right place. Let's get into it. Welcome back to a Digital Identity Digest. So, when I attend standards meetings, I'm always reminded that there's something true there that is the same as regular conferences, and that's that there's far more happening than anyone can reasonably absorb or physically be at any given time. So, for this time around, I found myself wishing I could attend the various web payments discussions at the W3C TPAC, that's the annual meeting for the World Wide Web Consortium. Now, it's not because I suddenly plan to reinvent myself as a payments expert. That's not going to happen. But because payments and digital identity are really starting to overlap in ways that you just cannot ignore. Now, I couldn't go to these because I had other meetings I was required to attend, so I did what any crazy standards person would do, and that was I went back to the meeting minutes after the event. Now, identity verification has always been part of payments. That's not new. Payments have had risk models, regulatory frameworks, and authentication requirements for, decades. But what is new is the way those requirements are increasingly expressed in the language of digital credentials, digital wallets, and browser APIs. So in this blog post, and subsequently this audio post, what I'm doing is I'm basically thinking out loud about what I learned reading through the web payments meeting minutes from TPAC. Now, I'm not an expert on payments. I'm not pretending to be one. But this is how I learn about new communities and their work, by listening carefully, by trying to notice the patterns, and ask myself what's actually changing beneath the surface. So let's start with some basics, right? At the W3C, there are two groups that come up repeatedly if you follow web payments. There is the Web Payments Working Group and the Web Payment Security Interest Group. Now, if you're interested in one, you're probably interested in the other, which makes it easy to lose sight of the fact that they exist for very different reasons. The Web Payments Working Group is where browser standards are built. This is the group responsible for things like the Payments Request API and the Payment Handler API and the Secure Payment Confirmation, often shortened to SPC. These conversations are very concrete. What they're asking is, can this be implemented across browsers? Will developers use it? Does it improve the user experience without breaking the web? Can it realistically ship? Now, the Web Payment Security Interest Group, the WPSIG, plays a very different role. It doesn't produce specifications. Instead, it acts as a coordination space across the browser ecosystem. So you've got browser vendors, payment networks, other standards organizations, wallet initiatives, and a whole lot more. It's where people compare notes, surface shared problems, and try to understand how different standards efforts intersect or how they collide. So while the charters are different, the concerns do overlap, and that's because the problems overlap. Now, across both groups, the same themes keep appearing. You've got digital wallets, you've got fraud, you've got regulation, user trust, and increasingly digital identity. Now, one of the strongest signals from both meetings was that wallet interoperability is not an optional construct. I mean, this ecosystem is crowded because you've got payment wallets, you've got identity wallets, you've got government-issued wallets, you've got browser-managed credentials, and you've got platform-specific solutions. And everyone agrees that fragmentation is bad, but no one has a single answer for how to resolve that. That tension becomes particularly visible to me once identity enters the picture, because the identity part is where I'm coming from. So, according to the meeting minutes, there were several presentations, especially those focused on Japan and Europe, that made it really clear that older approaches to identity proofing are not working very well. The selfie-based electronic Know Your Customer, EKYC, is being phased out because it's just too easy to spoof. Phishing-resistant authentication is becoming a regulatory expectation rather than just a best practice. And financial institutions are being asked not just whether a user is authenticated, but how did they do it? And can you demonstrate how they did it after the fact? In other words, did you log something? Now, in Japan, for example, there's apparently a clear shift towards IC chip-based identity cards and away from purely visual checks. Government guidelines now expect phishing-resistant MFA, with passkeys explicitly named as an option. Now, at the same time, the payments ecosystem there is really diverse. They're paying via QR codes, domestic networks, transit-driven adoption, and I still have to look up what that means exactly. And it's not particularly aligned with platform-centric wallet models like Apple Pay or Google Pay. Now, Europe tells a very different story, but with similar pressure points. There's a bunch of acronyms that popped out here, PSD3, AML6. These are all regulations, and there are other related regulations that are tightening requirements around fraud prevention, auditability, and accountability. There's growing tension between privacy expectation and forensic requirements, and no one pretends that this is easy to resolve. Now, this is where the Digital Credentials API, the DCAPI, starts to appear in the payments conversation. And that is my wheelhouse and part of why I'm so interested in what Web Payments is doing. So if you've been following the DCAPI from an identity perspective, you know it was designed as a privacy-conscious, user-mediated way for websites to request credentials. And I wrote a whole blog post about that. If you want, just go back a couple weeks and you'll see it. It is very intentionally scoped. It is not meant to be like a very smart data pipe. Now, what surprised me in the Web Payments Working Group minutes is how explicitly participants discussed whether the DCAPI might play a role in payment flows. I mean, there was sustained conversation about connecting the Payments Request API to the DCAPI. One framing was whether a payment flow should be able to invoke the DCAPI directly. Another was whether the DCAPI itself could be treated as a payment method within a payment request. And that's a pretty meaningful shift in thinking, and it's not something we're talking about in the working group where DCAPI is being worked on. So hearing this perspective in another group, working group was really interesting to me. I mean, in practical terms, participants, again, according to the media notes, were talking about scenarios where a wallet could return a digital credential during checkout, perhaps a credential that includes a particular kind of cryptogram or selectively discloses an attribute like a phone number, which is needed for risk analysis. The idea wasn't that the DCAPI would replace existing payment rails, but that credentials could become a part of how payments are authorized and confirmed. Now, at the same time, there's a whole lot of caution around this. Several people pointed out that the DCAPI was deliberately designed as a one-shot interaction with explicit user involvement. Turning it into a routine part of a payment flow risks expanding identity requirements in ways that are really hard to undo. And the W3C's technical advisory group has been very clear that the DCAPI should not become a mechanism for quietly gating commerce on identity disclosure. Now, I found it notable that no one dismissed the idea outright. The group didn't reach a conclusion, but the fact that the question was taken seriously tells you something about where payments are headed. It's that same sense of rethinking assumptions that showed up in discussions about secure payment confirmation. Now, SPC is one of the few browser features designed explicitly for payments, and when it works well, users tend to like it. It's faster than traditional, what's called 3DS flows. It reduces phishing risk, and it gives the browser a very clear role in mediating trust. But the meetings made it fairly clear that SPC is at an interesting turning point because it's starting to look at passkeys and a variety of other things. And passkeys, while incredibly valuable in many contexts, have introduced friction in payment flows. Cross-device syncing is unreliable, enrollment confuses users, failure modes are hard to explain, and in some cases, passkeys feel like an extra step layered on top of risk checks that the users already perform. And so there appeared to be a very growing interest in what people referred to as a BBK-only SPC. When I first saw that in the notes, I'm like, I have no idea what that means. BBK stands for browser-bound key. The idea is pretty straightforward. Instead of relying on a full passkey that syncs across devices and account, the browser generates a cryptographic key that's bound to a specific device and therefore, you know, a specific payment instrument. There's no syncing involved. There's no credential discovery. There's just a device-bound key used to confirm a transaction through SPC's trusted user interface. Now, for payments, this is obviously appealing for several reasons. It reduces the enrollment friction, it avoids cross-device complexity, and it still provides a strong device binding, which matters a lot for fraud prevention. Now, multiple participants openly questioned whether passkeys were ever the right abstraction for payment confirmation, and that's not actually a small query. That's actually a pretty big deal, given how much momentum passkeys have elsewhere. Now, another area where identity and payments are bumping into each other, perhaps faster than many expected, is agentic AI. So both the working group and the interest group spent time on agent-initiated payments, and there were demos showing early patterns where AI systems can initiate purchases or manage recurring transactions. And while everyone agreed that agents should not impersonate users, that's like one of the only things everybody absolutely agreed on, that should not happen. Instead, the emerging model looks much closer to mandate management. A user authorizes something upfront under specific conditions, and the agent operates within those boundaries. And that immediately raises, at least to me, very familiar identity questions. How is consent represented? How is it verified? How is it revoked? How is it audited? These are not new questions for people in the identity sphere, and they're really becoming unavoidable for payments. Now, the question of fraud sits behind all of this as a very constant pressure. Cross-device phishing, credential misuse, replay attacks, none of those respect working group boundaries, that's for certain. So discussions about SPC, the DCAPI, device-bound session credentials, and wallet trust signals all circle back to the same concern. How do we reduce risk without creating systems that are very brittle, very invasive, or impossible to deploy globally? So one thing that's pretty clear to me after reading the minutes is just how complementary the two groups really are. I mean, the web payments working group focuses on what browsers can actually ship. It deals in APIs, error codes, mediation modes, and test suite. It asks whether something can be implemented in a way that's interoperable and developer-friendly. And the web payments security interest group focuses on whether those things will make sense once they hit the real world. It looks at regulatory pressure, industry alignment, and wallet fragmentation, fraud dynamics, and emerging technologies like agentic AI. So yeah, they're solving different problems, but they're pushing on the same fault lines and doing it from different directions. I mean, I guess it should be obvious they're going to be complementary. They were kind of designed that way. I'm glad to see it's actually working out. Now, for me, spending time with the minutes wasn't, again, about becoming fluent in payments, right? It was about noticing how quickly digital identity concepts are becoming foundational in spaces that once thought they kind of had identity figured out. Wallets aren't just containers anymore, right? They're not just containers for credentials. And credentials are not just for governments. Browsers aren't just passive conduits. And payments are no longer insulated from the broader identity ecosystem. So I think the overlap is only going to continue to grow. I will absolutely keep watching this space, and I'll share what I learn as I go, not because, again, I have the answers, but because this is how I learn about where the web is headed next. And if nothing else, today I learned that web payments are a lot more about identity than I seem to recall they used to be. Thanks for your time. Stay tuned for the next episode, and share with others if you found it interesting. And that's it for this week's episode of the Digital Identity Digest. If it helps make things a little clearer, or at least a little more interesting, share it with a friend or colleague and connect with me on LinkedIn at HL Flanagan. And if you enjoyed the show, do be sure to subscribe and leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find the written full post at sphericalcowconsulting.com. Now stay curious, stay engaged, and let's get these conversations going.